Support for today's show is brought to you by our friends at SeatGeek. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there's a better way to buy with SeatGeek. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed. How can you beat that? So you shop for your tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Download the SeatGeek app. Enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
We can do it.
We can do it.
All right. Good pregame show. Here we go. Everybody ready?
Yeah.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Time for the Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's Monday, April 2nd, 2018. I'm Eric. He's Tristan. We've got researcher Kyle Soppe and then some old guys who got brought back in, probably against their will, fighting and screaming. Editorial watchdog today is Keith Lipscomb over from the football side. Keith, I know football is year-round now. Is there actually time in your day to devote, like, this 40 minutes to baseball? Just, you can be honest.
Man, I always have time for you guys. You know that. Come on.
Somebody's getting fired tomorrow. And, unfortunately, Gabe Bassain, the producer, is back. Demotion? I'm sorry. Is
not
that what it was?
Not a demotion at all. I am always here.
You thought you had escaped, and now, you know what? I predicted Anthony running away right away. I mean, like every producer does. Maybe it's the snow has something to do with it. It's snowing today. Now, how can that be? I was all ready today to watch ESPN Baseball, Yankees home opener, and the snow got in the way. Tristan, I don't like snow in April. What do you say?
Whoa! I only had one warm-up pitch. Hold up.
What, you going to sing now?
No!
Here comes the snow. Here comes the snow again. Who sang that?
I'm teasing a little bit. You and I had a little bit of a rough weekend watching our teams play here. So
no, I enjoyed my Sunday.
My team didn't play.
up. Capitalist brought in a reliever. Game doesn't start for 10 hours. All right, look.
I'm so disappointed to see this snow out. I mean, come on, a snow out in New York.
Oh, who would have thunk it? You know?
Yeah.
How about start all the games early in the season in, like, domes and the West Coast? I know that's probably unfair.
Not enough domes left.
No.
I know. It's, oh.
So maybe that's where the original editorial watchdog Leo is, getting ready for the Rays game. All right, there's lots to get to on today's show. We have good stats and bad. We have injuries. Hash Browns later on with Kyle. You're here, Kyle, right? You okay? Everything good?
Oh, yeah. We're doing all right here.
All right. Everybody's happy. Here is the buzz. All right, not that we were too worried, but Shohei Ohtani looked pretty good on Sunday afternoon, Tristan. I don't know if you got to see any of it. Other than the 3-run homer to Matt Chapman on a slider that didn't slide, I was really impressed. 6 innings. Fastball command was off, I would say that. The ball wasn't going where he wanted it to go. There's a difference in command and control. But otherwise, he's throwing really, really hard. There's very few guys like him. He looks really, really good. And, you know, in spring training, he didn't. So what's the difference here? Or is this a one-day thing? Would you try to sell high based on this experience that we saw yesterday? You tell me what you think.
I kind of would just lock him in at the value that we had projected, which was we felt he was potentially a top 100 player. He's a little bit outside of that. The spring concerns are still a little bit there. But, I mean, the velocity was impressive. Second fastest velocity of any guy so far during the first weekend series. 97.8 miles per hour on the fastball. I did see a bit of this game. As you said, Eric, I did think the command was a little bit off. That's going to sharpen with some experience, I think. I would say he's a top 30 starter candidate still. Maybe he drops into the numbers starting with 3. I'm cautiously optimistic.
So still a potentially top 20 starting pitcher.
Yeah.
Even though we were screaming about him in March.
But we weren't panicking, though. Let's not characterize it.
I don't think you and me were panicking, but I think a lot of people. Look, he was on my bust list, and I'm not changing that just because of one outing. Is that fair?
Well, I mean, we were also putting him on the bust list because he was being drafted something like 75th overall, which was just crazy. I think the problem with Ohtani is everybody's been expecting some sort of huge contribution with the bat, and the big issue is he starts that first game on opening day, goes gets just the one hit and five at-bats, doesn't look all that great, it's like spring training, and everybody's starting to press the panic button, and then he recovers with this good pitching outing.
I mean, it could have been two hits and five at-bats. One could have been a bleeder that went 10 feet. I mean,
sure.
I think the important thing here is, and obviously with a lot of things in baseball this first weekend, people want to overreact to what they've seen, whether it's managers doing unbelievable things, whether it's pitchers getting lit up, whether it's hitters that don't look good, whether it's Josh Donaldson who's hurt. You know, like a lot of things that people want to overreact to. I don't want to overreact to how good Ohtani looked either, because like, the value is over now. He's already on your team. So one could say if you think Ohtani's going to be a top 10 pitcher, then you should try to trade him right now for something really, really good. All right, here's an example. I have a league in which I have David Price, okay? And I ranked Price and Ohtani similarly, to be honest. I didn't expect either, and I don't expect either to surpass 150 innings. But I think the innings they give will be good, and I don't think Ohtani's going to matter at all at the plate, or Price for that matter. So I have Price in a league in which four of my six outfielders are on the disabled list. And a guy said, oh, well, I'll offer him Dexter Fowler and Marco Estrada for Price. And I thought about it, and then I thought, I want to see what Price does. I feel that way with Ohtani, okay? I want to see what he does. If he's bad, then I've missed my opportunity to trade him. But the upside is so great, I want to hold on to him.
Well, the other question I'd have is, why would you make any sort of transaction like that, any trade based on a difference from your preseason ranks or a preseason opinion of the player? I don't think there's anywhere near enough of a sample to make a judgment here, unless it's a matter of, for example, Josh Donaldson, where he's having some issues with throwing the dead arm comment. And even then, you can't trade him because his value has completely plummeted. I don't know why you'd make some sort of rash judgment like that. I wouldn't make that trade.
No, I didn't.
What I mean. Like, people are overreacting that. At this point, why is your opinion on a player that radically different from where it was in the preseason? For me, absolutely nothing's changed with my Ohtani evaluation. It's probably like 120th overall. Where was it? A starting pitcher, 29, I think? 32.
Yeah, so like any of the pitchers that we saw their first time around. Okay, I can go through a list here, and you can say briefly, yes, I like him more. No, I don't. Nothing's changed. Jose Berríos, that was pretty impressive. Anything changed for you?
No. But I also was optimistic about him in the preseason. I mean, I gave him a pretty good rank. 26th starter. He was in my top 100 to conclude spring training. I don't really move him all that much. The thing that encouraged me most about Berríos is that he went the distance in this game. And durability, workload are things that are very important nowadays. If he can give you 200-plus innings, that's a nice uptick in value.
What about Johnny Cueto? That was impressive. 7 innings, 1 hit against the Dodgers.
And in Cueto's case, the actionable thing here is that if he is fully healthy and the old Cueto of 2, 3, 4 years ago is back, which this hinted of that, that could make a big difference in rankings. Because the ranking in the preseason for Cueto, for you and I, and I think everybody else out there, accounted for the prospect that he doesn't get back to full form, that he does miss some time with injury. So, yeah, maybe I'd move him up 4 or 5 spots among the starters.
Felix Hernandez of the Mariners. He looked good in his first outing. He wasn't throwing hard. I would argue, and it was against a good offense in Cleveland. I would argue you move him whatever you can.
Move him in a trade.
Yeah.
Not in the rankings, I hope.
No, I mean, I don't even think he's a top 50 starter for me. Is he a top 50 for you?
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah.
I'd be shocked if he finished there.
Anyone else here? How about Kyle Gibson, who was on both of our sleeper lists? He didn't exactly have his control, walking 6. Before we get to Gibson, can you please explain briefly in 30 seconds the difference in command and control? Because we talk about both on this show, and I do think that from Twitter I see some people saying, well, I don't think you know the difference. Well, explain the difference in command and control, because I think we do know the difference.
Okay, so putting aside the numerical part of this from the scouting perspective, control is the ability to place the ball in the strike zone. Command is the ability to place the ball where you want it, and that's especially within said strike zone. If you're going to look at it from a statistical angle, and I know Baseball HQ, for example, does this a lot, they will call control the walk rate of a player, and they will call the command a K to walk rate of a player. That's the closest you're going to get from a pure statistical perspective, and I wouldn't just lean on that as the go-to answer for it. It has to do with scouting. It has to do with the eye test. It's not something that you can put down on paper.
That's why you win your leagues. Felix Hernandez is the number one most added starting pitcher in ESPN leagues. He's already up to 68.9%, which it's just way too high. I mean, there's guys that are being added that are below him. Patrick Corbin, I'd rather have than Felix. He's second most added. Jake Odorizzi, I'm still kind of on the fence. It was a good first outing for Jake. Tyler Skaggs, really. Rick Porcello's at 71%, which I think is fine. He's going to win games. I think he's better than last year, not as good as 2 years ago. Sean Manaea. Sean Manaea's first outing was interesting. Right? He gave up a homer. I don't remember who it was. It was a Trout. He gave up something, but it was a decent outing. Was it seven? I want to make sure.
It was seven and two-thirds.
It was seven and two-thirds, only one run. It was a good outing for him. Oh, yeah, it was Trout. I like Manaea. That's one of those situations where, yeah, the first couple outings can make a difference in how I view a player, especially if he's available in a lot of leagues. Manaea is up to 31%, so he's out there in a lot of leagues. I would rather own Sean Manaea than Felix Hernandez, wouldn't you?
I would. I would have in the preseason. It's a stronger feeling now based on this first appearance. And Eric, to your point, one of the reasons why I think it's okay for you and I to, quote, overreact, and it's not actually overreacting, is that he also entered with some questions about the health, about whether he's proven himself at the major league level. This is an important first step for him.
All right, some bad pitcher performances. Carlos Martinez, that was bad. Six walks, giving up hits. It was against the Mets. I was watching it, and I was like, oh, boy. And I've got shares of him in a couple places. James Paxton was bad, also walking people, a lot of runs. Kevin Gausman, I don't know what to make of him ever. John Lester scared me. That John Lester outing was bad. And I remember what you were saying about, you know, David Ross not being his catcher, and I was thinking, man, it was an early pull, too. It was like in the fourth inning with a lead. Yep. And I tweeted something out like, you know, Madden is not, you know, Madden could have left Lester in to get a couple more outs and get the win. I don't even know if they won the game. Was that they won later. Cishek got the win. But Lester scares me. Carlos Martinez, Paxton, Gausman do not. Do you agree with that?
I'll put Gausman aside for a second here. Lester, yeah. I mean, Lester really didn't show me anything different than what my opinion was in the preseason, so I'm not going to move him down in the ranks based on that. I've been kind of lukewarm on him in the first place. Gausman, you know what really bugs me about him is, now in his defense, he did actually throw harder in this game than last year, and it was by a pretty significant margin, had one of the greatest gains by comparison to last year. I think it was about 2 miles per hour higher on the fastball, but that's not the pitch that's his key to success. During the second half of last season, it was going to the off-speed pitches, and that explained the strong second half. What bothers me with him is that what if he's becoming a first second-half pitcher, that he's the kind of guy who needs 2 months to get to full speed? That's just not a good enough player to be ranked where he was or drafted or where he was, so I probably overreacted in the preseason to him.
I bet if Lester's next outing is bad, he ends up on the most dropped list. I don't see him there now. He's not among the top 25 starting pitchers that are being dropped. There's some names on there that shouldn't. Gausman's on there. Danny Duffy's on there. That was a bad outing.
Yep.
and he's got a shoulder problem. I actually wrote in my article on Friday that I'm not even sure he makes his next start because of shoulder issues, but he probably will now.
You know who else had a bad outing that kind of bugged me? The changeup was great, granted, and I love his changeup, Luis Castillo. It was disappointing.
That was bad.
It was very disappointing.
I mean, Matt Adams hit a 3-run jack in the first thing. That happens. But even after that, he didn't settle down. Command was way off. All right, so those are the starting pitchers. Let's do the relievers. Here's a closer carousel.
The closer carousel.
All right, the good first, Hunter Strickland. 1-0 saves in the first 2 days of the season against the Dodgers. I expected Sam Dyson, I'll be honest. I didn't think he'd go to Strickland. Strickland's probably a better pitcher than Dyson. But last year he had trouble against left-handed hitters, which leads me to believe that Strickland doesn't keep his job. And they're saying Lanson could be back in like mid-April. That seems awfully strange to me with an arm problem that lasted all last year and necessitated surgery, don't you think?
I do, and I think that the timetable that's being thrown out there is going to be extremely variable. It could go very well, or it could be something that lingers the entirety of the year, and that's part of the reason that I like the Strickland choice here. They're throwing the guy who's the most interesting from a fantasy perspective into the role right away, looks very good initially, and it's coming on the heels of a very strong spring training, which you and I discussed last week. I do think this is the guy to go ahead and go get. I think that there is very realistic chances here that he's in the top 20 fantasy starters at the end of the year, and that might be underrating it.
You have one spot for a relief pitcher, Hunter Strickland or Brad Boxberger?
Strickland.
Okay. And I would say Hunter Strickland versus Blake Parker. Wouldn't you have to take Strickland now? Parker gave up runs in each of his first two outings. Keenan Middleton replaced him in the ninth inning of Sunday's game. I would expect Middleton to get the next save chance from Mike Socia, wouldn't you?
And, well, possibly.
It can't be Parker. It can't be Parker.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, is that it's Mike Socia, anything goes. I mean, you and I know that. It's been a running joke for, what, 3 years now? But Keenan Middleton is the interesting arm in that bullpen. That was the guy who was the sleeper for the AL-only owners in the preseason. Now it's gotten into the mixed territory. So it wouldn't surprise me in any means. And I do think that he's worth the speculative pickup.
Any other closer situations you're worried about, think that could be replaced soon? There was that Detroit-Pittsburgh game. Shane Green and Felipe Rivera each gave up a bunch of runs, but Rivera had two saves yesterday in the doubleheader. Green, I guess. I mean, Detroit looks really bad. Detroit and Florida situations, man. I don't know how the team's going to get 30 saves. And Miami looked good against the Cubs, actually. They split the four-gamer. Ziegler, I mean, how is Brad Ziegler their closer? I don't know.
The Miami one's going to be one to track all year, because the more intriguing arms for the fantasy perspective are the guys who are working behind him. By the way, Rivero did bounce back nicely with the Daisy Fuentes. Yeah.
Oh, do we have that sound somewhere?
The Daisy Fuentes.
You guys are so cute.
Yeah, Olé!
Actually not us that was so cute. It was
probably had all the Fuentes this week. I know we had a Dante Fuentes, and then we had everything. I mean, it was a great weekend for that.
Could you please describe the Fuente and what they are? Because I don't know what's a Daisy Fuentes. Somebody might be new listening to the show. I can't imagine.
Okay, so the Daisy Fuentes is the 1-2-3 inning that gets the save where all three are strikeouts. The Dirty Fuentes is at least one run allowed, at least three of the combined hits plus walks plus runs allowed and getting the save. And the Dante Fuentes is the non-save situation for the closer, where he gets bombed like a Dirty Fuentes.
Which was Shane Green and Rivera that first day.
Yes, Rivera definitely did.
Green came in on a tie game, gave up four runs. I think only charged. Anyway, we're wasting time. Hitting side now, Jose Martinez looked very good the first weekend. And the reason why we're going to be on board here is because they're clearly going to play Matt Carpenter at third base and Martinez at first base, which means none of your friend Judd Jerko. Martinez is up to 73% owned. You have a choice between Matt Davidson, who had three home runs in the first game, or Jose Martinez. Who are you taking?
Jose Martinez, but I would have felt that way in the preseason too. So the real plus for Martinez has nothing to do with the stats. It has to do with, as you said, the playing time.
I mean, Davidson had three home runs, and I wrote about it and said, so what? You know, if he did that in a June game, you wouldn't have cared. He's going to be on the most drop list in a week.
Is it toughie, or is it something more?
You know, Matt Davidson's power is legit. I can see him hitting 40 home runs. I think we discussed this in a show in March.
Mm-hmm. We did, but
he could bat 220 with a 260 on base, and the White Sox should just stop playing him. There's no need for the White Sox to play this guy. He's not a part of their future. So, you know, I mean, he's their DH. If they bring up Eloy, he wouldn't be the DH. So, you know, maybe he does get 500 at-bats. I'm cautioning people on Matt Davidson because, yes, it's power, but that's all it is. Jose Martinez is just a better hitter.
Yeah, and I mean, in Davidson's case, what's going to be maddening is the inconsistency. I mean, the guy is going to, by nature, be a streaky player. Martinez's advantage is I don't think he's going to be streaky. I think he's going to be very consistent. He balances the batting average and the home runs. It's kind of rare to see a player like that nowadays. But this is the other thing. We don't want to overrate Jose Martinez either, do we?
Well, you know, we could play a little name game and figure it out.
Ooh. I can't get no quality starts.
So, like, stop. You think he's okay? Like,
I don't think so.
Twitter's angry at us, and good for them. I love it.
Johnny Hazelbaker.
Jeremy.
I'm never going to get that guy's name right.
Kermit the Frog. Waka Waka Waka.
I'm glad you didn't go. Kermit the Frog. Ooh, popcorn flavored jelly bean.
Clearly the weirdo is Tristan. Wasn't even that the beard is you.
There's no doubt who the weirdo is.
I'm with you there.
What is Mets? He's a Yankees fan.
Sorry, Yankees. Why did I say Mets?
Somebody is joining the bias cat in my doghouse.
That just happened.
Wow. High five, Gabe. That was a good choice. Two Cardinals references and the Mets, who were their opponent. Well done.
I also caught in there the old Hash Brown song that someone must have pulled. It was underneath somewhere there. So, all happy memories. Good stuff.
Jose Martinez versus Mitch Haniger. Haniger homered twice this weekend.
Martinez.
You say that confidently, and I don't believe you.
I like Haniger a lot, but I feel like there's much better batting average stability with Martinez. And I think at this point,
how do you know that? Haniger was hurt half of last season. You don't know that.
I think his skills and batting average are better than they were a month ago.
Yeah, but one of them is more likely to lose playing time, and it ain't Haniger. They're playing Ichiro every day and left. I mean, Seattle needs outfielders desperately.
They just looks Jason rejuvenated. Worth. Come on. He caught that fly ball over the fence. Come on. He's great.
Hanniger is going to play, and Jose Martinez goes into a 2-for-20 slump, and they play Jerko. You know that. I'm taking
Hanniger. I don't think he's going into a 2-for-20 slump. I really think
I got to compare Jose Martinez to, like, you know, Eric Hosmer. I mean, how high are you going here on Jose Martinez?
Not that high.
Okay.
Well, where is Hanniger? Like, give me the ranking number from a top 250 perspective on Hanniger, and then give me for Martinez.
I probably
range.
I both in the top 200.
Yeah, okay, I'm with you on that. I'm looking at, I think, 175 and 200.
Yeah, I would say that's where the range is. So, I mean, if you want to add Jose Martinez and drop, like, Logan Morrison, I think it's a mistake. You probably don't. But I think it's a mistake to do that. But, you know, I wouldn't argue. Eric Thames, who, you know, they're not trading Ryan Braun, people. So I don't know how, you know, Eric Thames is going to play. I mean, Matt Chapman's on the most drop list. Evan Longoria is on the most drop list.
How is Matt Chapman on the most drop list? Oh, he finally homered, too.
It was before that. Chris Davis of Baltimore's on that list. Everybody's overreacting to everything, which is why Jose Martinez is going to be up to 95% owned soon. And people are going to be dropping good players. It's a mistake.
One thing to keep in mind out of this tier is that in our game with daily transactions, this could just be a matter of streaming players. And in Jose Martinez's case, his per-game upside is at least competitive with these guys, and I'd argue it's greater. So from that aspect, in a mixed league, I do like him better than these guys.
How about Zach Cozart? He's the new leadoff hitter and second baseman for the Angels. So he's shortstop eligible, supposed to move to third base. Now he's playing second base. He's going to end up with triple eligibility. Ian Kinsler's coming back in like a week or two. But I think by the end of April, strange here, we're going to see Zach Cozart with eligibility of three infield spots. He probably won't lead off when Kinsler comes back. He's not a base stealer. But I was telling you I liked him a lot a couple weeks ago, and you were like, well, he had one good half season. Like, what is Zach Cozart? I think Zach Cozart can be a top 100 player.
I think that's a little over... estimating his value, top 100. I mean,
he had 20 home runs in 120 games. I mean, he's clearly capable of 30 home runs.
No, he played 120 games. The 120 games is the important number here. He's had a checkered injury history. That's actually the thing that bothers me most about Cozart, is that the power was very legit. He made the adjustments to fuel that. But can you really write him down for 150 games? Because I can't.
I can't write down Giancarlo Stanton for 150 games.
Well, that's
the same argument.
Well, I don't know why people are optimistic about Stanton. You and I have talked about that.
I know
for
why, because he had 1,000 home runs last year. Everybody loves him. Nobody's even thinking about anything before last year. That's the world we live in. No one cares.
I know.
So how about me sitting Nelson Cruz in this awful 11-day week for Kevin Pillar, and then he steals second, third, and home in the same inning?
Yeah,
I was like, yeah.
Thanks.
And Cruz homered twice. And still, it was worth it. I love that.
By the way, that grand slam by Smoke off David Robertson. Oh, man. I mean, falls behind in the count. Maddening. Maddening. Yankee bullpen has given up four home runs and has an ERA greater than 7. The Yankee bullpen, the one that everybody loved.
Dude, I like you, but shut up. My bullpen is... my bullpen has more innings than my starting rotation.
Your bullpen's average innings per outing is what?
I'd really rather not get... Oh, you know what? Let's briefly get to this, okay? Because, you know, everyone in this town has him fired already. Would you downgrade Aaron Nola and Jake Arrieta, and I guess Hector Neris to some degree, based on the tendency showed after three games by the new Phillies manager? Let's let you answer that.
I don't want to do it, but if that's the way he's going to play day in and day out, then yeah, I will. And I'll downgrade Hector Neris, too. And I'd be a little concerned that there's going to be too much mixing and matching on the offensive side. I do not want to overreact, and I'm not going to move them in the ranks yet, but we're on red alert here.
You think? I'm, like, hoping it gets snowed out tonight in New York.
I think it was
It doesn't matter what the average. It was three games, okay?
They pitched 25 relief appearances or something like that in 20... Wasn't it something like that?
It
in 28 innings? They averaged 0.7... innings per
yeah,
relief outing.
In games two and three, they had to do that. In game one, he didn't have to do that. I refuse to believe that it's Gabe Kapler's fault that Vince Velasquez got tuned up for seven runs. It's not.
Look, he called on a reliever who hadn't even started warming up yet. Like, the bullpen management so far is a bit questionable.
It hasn't been positive. I will give you that.
It has to improve by nature of there's no other way to go.
I would hope. Well, there won't be any relievers left.
What is Nola's average pitch per? What do you think he's going to average in terms of pitch count per start?
I think you can't possibly know that. It was one day.
I know, but that's what I mean. It's got to be 90 plus.
It'd be up to 90 probably by this week.
The next outing, if he throws 75 pitches, what do we do?
Well, Rob Thompson's probably the manager. I mean, I don't know. I just don't want to overrate one weekend, okay? I mean,
yeah,
one
I
mistake. I mean, it just seems really odd to me that everyone's jumping on this bandwagon to say he can't be a manager. You know, as from the Phillies, from looking at it from a fantasy angle, okay, I don't want to downgrade Nola or Arrieta or even Neris right now. Neris is clearly his closer. I don't want to downgrade any of the offensive players, even though they're all going to play a little bit less, it looks like. I mean, Kingery played two of the three games. Odubel played two of the three. Everybody's playing two out of three instead of three out of three. I think it'll work itself out.
Kingery's going to be a fun player, though, with the multi-eligibility.
I can't believe they didn't give him the stolen base. I don't know if you saw it, but he stole second base after his first major league hit, and they called it a wild pitch. Basically, bounced in front of the catcher.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Rangers lose the line of the Shields. This is it for the first half of the show. What does that mean? Because there's only like six guys we projected for 30 or more stolen bases, and he was one of them. That's a big deal.
It is a big deal. It also changes the lineup and moves Elvis Andrus, who's in the three, up to the leadoff spot. That's going to have a little bit of a bearing on his because it's going to shift the RBI into the runs. I do think it kind of weakens the lineup a little bit. What it's going to do is it's going to throw Drew Robinson, my preseason sleeper for the AL-only leagues, into the lineup a little bit more often, so we got an opportunity there. I think in those leagues he might actually be available as a free agent. And maybe Willie Calhoun. Well, Willie Calhoun's still got the service
waiting.
Time question.
That's service time because they know they're bad. There's no reason to bring him up right away. People don't understand why they haven't brought him up. That's why. All right.
I don't like the bottom half of the Texas lineup, though. There's a hit here.
Ever so briefly, for the next couple of days, let's go through and name a pitcher or so that we are looking at. You know, a guy that, well, certainly a guy that's going to pitch. Let's put it that way because of the weather. But who is pitching today that you would like to discuss? You weren't on Mike Clevenger's bandwagon. So ESPN has a bunch of games. Well, one less game because the Yankee game was snowed out. But Baltimore-Houston, 7 p.m. Eastern time on our air. And then ESPN2, the Indians and the Angels starting at 10:07, right around the time at halftime where Villanova's up by about 15 on Michigan. Mike Clevenger, your thoughts here. Is it a big outing for you, or is it just one outing?
I think I'd call it a big outing.
All right.
I feel like it's not a big outing. I don't. I think it's, you know, there's nothing he's going to prove to me. I mean, the guy's good for strikeouts, and I question the ratios.
Tuesday, Marco Gonzalez and Ty Black. We know what Ty Black is. Do we know what Marco Gonzalez is? What if he pitches well?
We do not, and based on the strong spring training, pitching in an extreme pitcher's park like this, I do think he needs to kind of cement that status from the preseason. This needs to be a good outing for him. Otherwise, it's going to spawn the question of, was this entire spring a mirage?
Blackjack Flaherty at Milwaukee on Tuesday, or Felix Hernandez? You have one spot. Felix is the most added pitcher in ESPN leagues. Flaherty has not pitched this year. Who are you adding?
Flaherty, by far.
I agree. Wednesday, Mike Foltynewicz against Washington. Interested?
No, not really.
No, not really.
I like him, but that's going to be one of his weaker matchups is when he draws the Washington.
Big outings for Tyler Skaggs against Cleveland on Wednesday. And Aaron Sanchez, who was pounded in his first outing, he's facing the White Sox at home. That better go well. I mean, yeah. Look, I don't want to overreact, but, I mean, everyone's just going to drop him.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't make a great case, depending on who I'm dropping to add Sanchez, if he pitches poorly again.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm trying not to overreact here, but, I mean, there was a bit too much buzz on him in the preseason. I mean, there's no lock he's going to get to the 200 innings. I just don't want to get ahead of myself there.
And, yes, our next show is Thursday. Deal with it. Support for Fantasy Focus Baseball also comes from our friends at MeUndies. You want to look good in your underwear? Who doesn't, right? And be comfortable. Don't sacrifice style or comfort. Check out MeUndies. They're the perfect balance of comfortable fit. Every month they have new and exciting prints, and they arrive at your door in a fun bag. MeUndies uses Lensing Micromodal in their underwear. It's a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fiber that starts with beechwood trees and ends with the most amazing fabric you've ever experienced. The results have been downright dreamy. I can confirm that. MeUndies adventurous prints and designs are all limited edition, and new patterns are released every few weeks on a rolling basis. 100% satisfaction guarantee. MeUndies guarantees you will love their undies or your money back. MeUndies has an exclusive offer for our listeners. For any first-time purchasers, when you purchase any MeUndies, you get 20% off and free shipping. MeUndies is so sure you will love their underwear, and you will. They will offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't love your first pair, you get a full refund. This is a no-brainer, folks. Get 20% off a pair of the most comfortable undies you will ever put on. To get your 20% off your first pair, free shipping, 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/FFB. That's MeUndies.com/FFB. Wrong music. You're off the show. Where's Kaladiude? No.
Oh.
I knew you were going to do
rejected.
That. So predictable. Gabe's just angry because he has better shows he works on. He's like, oh, I got to do this one again. I'm going to like play the bad
there's a little
music.
Bit of nostalgia in it for me. No come back to the show.
Likes. He's going back
I'm
to
just
the classics.
Like to normal, yeah.
No.
All the good stuff.
Not normal. Normal would be the lady with emphysema. Whatever that song was called.
I would play that if you remembered it correctly, but since you don't remember it,
Lady from Empanama. What's it called?
Lady from Empanada.
Lady with empanadas. She's got empanadas. You don't like empanadas, Gabe?
Lippy does. Like empanadas,
come on.
But that's not the name of the
song.
We
all like empanadas. You owe us an empanada song. I want it.
All right. When I see you guys next time, I'll buy you an empanada.
When you see, I haven't seen you in 3 years. Okay.
That is a lie. That is a bold-faced lie.
Factually correct. I wouldn't be able to pick you out of a lineup. Unless you're holding empanadas. Or we're coughing with emphysema. I hope that lady with emphysema is okay. All right, Kyle, what do we got?
That's my favorite part of the show every time. All right, Johnny is wondering if you got any lineup concerns in the early going here. He's not thrilled with Byron Buxton and Trey Turner batting down in the lineup.
Yes, I certainly do, Kyle, and I'm glad you asked that question because I forgot to bring it up in the first half of the show. Although if I had looked at the script here and seen it was one of the Hashbrowns, I wouldn't have brought it up anyway. Trey Turner batting sixth, that's a big problem, Tristan. Now, you wrote a story, and you probably updated it over the years. I don't pay attention. But you said that people can steal bases even batting sixth, seventh, and eighth in the lineup. Trey Turner, if we projected, say, 60 steals batting first or second, do we project 50 or 40 now if he bats sixth all year? Do tell.
You know what actually bothers me more about moving from two to six there is that the hit on the number of plate appearances the guy is going to get over the course of the year. So if he sticks, I believe from two to six, it will be somewhere in the range of 35 PAs lost for the year, which means he's probably going to lose 10, 12 times on base. Maybe, and that's going to influence the stolen bases. The data I showed, the main reason that stolen bases were lower from the 4, 5, 6 spots in the lineup is the nature of the players who were typically thrown into those spots. But if you threw players who did have natural speed into them, they typically didn't show that much of a decline. So I think Turner's still going to get opportunities. It's just that I think there's less playing time. You can't turn the lineup over and get to number six as often over the course of 162.
But let me say this, as a person who follows sabermetrics, I love Anthony Rendon batting second.
Like he's
batting,
yeah.
He's batting second on my sim team, Lippy knows. And the point here is he'll bat more. He'll bat in between Adam Eaton, who looks great, and Bryce Harper, who looks great. I mean, it's the right thing to do. You don't just automatically bat your speedy guys at the top of a lineup. The fact that Billy Hamilton hit ninth in game one for Jesse Winker, I love that. So if you say to me, who's a better hitter between Anthony Rendon and Trey Turner? Of course it's Rendon. More power, gets on base, selective. He's just not as fast. It really is the right thing to do, but it hurts fantasy for stolen bases.
357 on base in his career for Rendon. It is 350 for Trey Turner. I don't have a major problem from the player who's being thrown in there. I think Rendon is an extremely good player, too. I'm with you on that.
Last year's on base was a lot higher.
But but I'm saying from the career perspective, he had 7 points over Trey Turner. So it's not like they're throwing a guy who doesn't belong there into the number two spot.
It's not like they're batting Matt Wieters second. All right, so Byron Buxton's situation is a little bit different. He's not, to me, as safe as Trey Turner is. Of course, you're not going to drop him. But him batting eighth, again, back to the story you used to write. Yes, you bat less. Do you run less? And there's no pitcher on deck. So it's a little bit different than, you know, a National League guy.
I actually would worry a little bit about him because I do think that if he had been at the top of the lineup, he would be given the green light a little bit more often. And as I said, that has the plate appearances impact. And in his case, it's important to do that because his on-base percentage is not especially good. He's not a natural fit for the 1-2 spot based on base. But so far, 2 steals in the 3 games. So he is getting the green light, even though he's hitting lower in the lineup. And I think that's going to stay. The problem is, do we really think his ceiling is in the 30s in stolen bases? Because I now question that a little bit.
I question it, too. And by the way, the Twins are doing the right thing, too. Dozier, Mauer, Sano, Rosario, Morrison, that's a really good top five for them.
Sure.
Buxton should not be in there. And then Chris Davis of Baltimore batting first. I'm trying to think of other interesting lineups that I've seen so far. I love Chris Davis batting first, and he likes it too. He hasn't done anything so far, but don't overreact to that. People are already dropping him because, of course, people. But anyway, stolen bases seems like a category that's gotten hit hard a little bit so far. With the Shields going on the DL, with Turner and Buxton being moved down in the lineup, man, it's a little bit scary. That's all. Who's going to run? I mean, Souza's on the DL. He was a runner.
Souza, actually, there's been some positive news about him maybe beating the projected timetable of mid-May.
Kyle, what's next?
All right, we've got Jason, who notes that Eric typically preaches patience, so he's guessing you don't make a lot of moves in April. He wants to know what you have to see in the first month of the season to sell you on making a waiver wire move this time of year.
You know what? There's no like nothing written down on this. It's basically I see it. Like I can see Jose Martinez keeping that first base job. He's legitimate. He's not, you know, top 10 first baseman. He could end up there, I suppose. What if Jose Martinez is this year's Ryan Zimmerman, Tristan? That could happen.
Sure.
So I look at a guy like that sitting on free agency. I say, can I drop somebody to pick him up and at least see what happens? There's obvious upside for playing time and for statistics. Each situation is a little bit different. A closer situation, obviously Hunter Strickland, you got to add him. He could keep the job all year. I don't know when Melanson's coming back. Boxberger, too. He could keep the job all year. Your best pitcher does not have to be the closer. And it's not. Archie Bradley is a guy who can get 4 or 5 outs. I love it. I mean, it's the smart thing to do. What do you need to see?
I would say that the 70% of people, leagues who left Jose Martinez undrafted, according to the ADP as of first pitch on opening day, made a big mistake. And that would have been said on March 24th, just as much as it would have been said today. Very good player. Very, very good upside. The kind of guy who gives you the per-game performance. I would agree with you on that. Playing time is the most likely thing to influence changes right now. If you feel that a player's role has significantly changed, as you mentioned, Eric, and we've talked about a few of those guys, that's the one time where I would make the move. Also, if players are hot early and it's not just some fluky thing, BABIP related or the like, if they've elevated their launch angle, the big popular word there, they're the ones who I would be picking up and perhaps overreacting to. You might as well take your flyers on the hot starters.
Yeah, I mean, guys being added that I wouldn't add Matt Davidson. I wouldn't add Chris Iannetta. Joe Panik, no, come on.
No Iannetta, huh?
I know what he is. I mean, in an ESPN standard, who you drop? Which catchers are you dropping? You're dropping Salvador Perez and Mike Zunino. Zunino could be back in 8 days. They're dropping JT Realmuto. I would not drop any of those three catchers for Chris Iannetta.
In fairness, the Zunino people had questions about whether he would return as quickly, and then the good news came out yesterday that he probably would return quickly. So if they reacted to that thinking he'd miss 3 weeks, I understand it. Iannetta is one of the few guys who are beyond the top 10 at the position who I do think have the upside in the ballpark to make the case. But as you said, Eric, I'm with you. He is borderline.
All right. What's next?
All right, we were talking batting order earlier. Seth wants to know where you think Acuña slides in once he finally gets acclimated with this lineup. He thinks that the 1-3 guys are pretty locked in.
Yeah, and I got a good look at the Atlanta lineup the first weekend of the season. And I didn't want to watch any baseball at all yesterday. Burnt out already. Inciarte, Albies Freeman is really good. I think he's going to bat cleanup. I think he's going to hit in between Freeman and Markakis.
After Markakis' good start?
Well, he hit a home run off Neris.
That's a good start.
So they're good at bat.
I know it is, but everybody's. But this is the way we react to this game.
I mean, they need a right-hander with power, and he's going to be literally the only guy in their lineup right-hander with power. I mean, you look at that team. They employ, you know, Dansby Swanson has no power. Peter Borjos, Lane Adams, Acuña instantly becomes their best right-handed hitter for power. I think he's going to back cleanup. I don't care that he's a rookie and never played before.
I don't see them doing that with him initially, do you? I don't. I think they're going to throw him I think they'll probably throw him 5-6. I could see them actually batting a guy like Preston Tucker ahead of him, but it would be very smart, as you said, to throw the righty in there to give a little bit of balance, avoid the late-inning matchup.
Preston Tucker's not going to play. Acuña's taking his spot.
Oh, of course, yes.
I mean,
right.
I can see them leaving Markakis for Kurt Suzuki, who did hit well last year, 5, and then batting Acuña 6, but that's going to be like a week. And
actually, yeah, you could go lefty switch, lefty righty, lefty righty, lefty righty. Yeah,
that's why I thought about this. I think Acuña is going to hit cleanup, and I think he's going to be amazing right away. So Just don't overrate lineup stuff too much. I mean, we think Acuna's going to be great because we think he's going to be great. Kingery's been batting sixth for Philadelphia because we've seen the template for that lineup. Cesar Hernandez, one. Carlos Santana, two. A lefty hitter, either Nick Williams or Odubel, three. And then cleanup is Rhys Hoskins, who's going to hit 40 home runs. That's his lineup at the top. I don't know if Kingery's getting in there. So
when Cesar sits, who leads off?
I guess Kingery could. Not a real patient hitter. I mean, he looks good. Maybe he wants a lefty. I don't know. He's got a lot to think about.
Would they go Santana first and then maybe throw another guy at two? Maybe they throw Altair if it's a lefty, or they could
Kapler has already said he knows that the most RBI chances come for the number two and number four hitters. I think Santana and Hoskins are locked into those spots. They're not
interesting.
Moving.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
All right. What's next?
Frankie wants to apologize to all the Chetwood truthers out there, but he wants to know, what are the odds that Porcillo and his 220 ADP are one of the steals of the 2018 draft season?
That must have hurt for you to read that one, huh?
It was tough. It seemed like a reasonable question, but I put it at the end of the list, so if we didn't get to it, I was okay with it.
So, like, Lippy, if you missed the memo here, it turns out that Soppy and Chetwood are actually related. They're like third cousins 18 times removed or something like that. I don't know exactly what it is, but like, he loves Tyler Chatwood more than like the Cubs do. It's really very strange.
Oh, he definitely loves him more than anybody I've ever known loved a player in general.
So, look, Tristan and I, before the season, I think we have Chatwood ranked ahead of Porcello.
As you should.
And
not
I don't
by
think,
much.
No, it's actually pretty close, and I don't think one outing is going to change that. I don't think it should. Chatwood hasn't even pitched yet, has he?
Today, 4 o'clock, be there.
Yep.
Weather permitting. How does Tyler Chatwood pitch in the snow? Do you know?
Great snow pitcher. He played, we'll say, football growing up.
I think he throws a little snowball.
He pitched in Colorado, you know, I mean, of all places to have snow.
What a joke. And there's no solution to this. You can't start the season on May 1st. Look, Porcello is a guy who could pitch as – he's already proven he can pitch as well as he did 2 years ago, and he can pitch as poorly as he did last year. But Tristan, there's a reason why you didn't like him very much for this year, and it's because you don't think that Porcello can get back to that. And you look at last season's numbers and you say, yeah, the K rate went up, but still, this isn't right. What were the trends on Porcello other than the 85 home runs?
That's an excellent question. I was actually kind of
hoping
cautiously
optimistic.
I was cautiously optimistic about Porcello coming into this year, but I feel like last year taught us the lessons that everything that broke right for him went back the other direction, and it was a reminder of pitchers who do not have elite strikeout totals are more susceptible to the variable impacts of BABIP, homer to fly ball rate and the like, and the influence on ERA and whip. In his case, I thought he was going to have a little bit of a spring back to the positive, but I also don't want to this is one case where I'm not going to overreact. First of all, he didn't even get to six innings in the first outing, and he pitched in Tropicana Field, which is an extreme pitcher's park. In his career, 2.43 ERA and 13 starts at that venue.
Very few pitchers got to six innings. What did I read the stat? Like,
but there's nothing in that outing.
Was 5 innings.
There's nothing in that outing that said, "Hey, Porcello's back." I feel like Porcello's that guy who you throw the number 70 or 75 right around where you would with Chatwood, but Chatwood probably has a little bit more upside of the two.
Look, I need to see a month anyway. Don't you need to see 3 weeks of outings?
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I mean, like, Porcello could rebound into, let's say, the top 40. But are we going to call him the best value here? Like, that's not a huge, huge profit.
I agree. There's certain leagues where you just wouldn't want to mess with Rick Porcello. If you need innings, safe innings, I mean, I think that's a guy. There's no upside. I don't think there's upside for 2 years ago.
The fun part is when you're trying to call up your little playbook here and you can't do it because your computer is disagreeing with you, so I wanted to find exactly what it was last year I didn't like.
That never happens. Let me ask you a question since I think the questions are over. The weather, what role does that play? You must have some leagues that where you can change lineups today. You can't do it in ESPN standard ones, but there must be some leagues. And, you know, it could be cold this week. You know, when I tweeted something out about that Tigers-Pirates game the other day, I instantly got back the wrath of people saying, it's 30 degrees, you try pitching in this crap. Well, I can't, okay? But when it is cold, do you have any, like, data to tell us that pitchers struggle more, or they go shorter in games, or there's more or less home runs, or more or less stolen bases? This weather, what does that mean to you, or does it mean nothing?
It actually will influence in a negative way the power So I do think that will explain, for example, yesterday's a little bit lower scores if there were lower temperatures. That's one thing where there was data about Minnesota where the temperatures were higher in that season 2 years ago. So keep that in mind. The other thing, too, is the postponements are a major problem in cities where they're at risk of this. And the one that immediately comes to mind is Boston, where they're already talking about the home openers and the home opening series against Tampa. They're playing a five-game week if you split this into seven. The three final games are Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday with 2 days off. It's a five-game week. And they're talking snow there potentially later in the week, which is crazy.
Yep, it is. I don't like it. If you haven't seen the Chase Utley thing with the minor leaguer, you got to check it out online. It's a cool story. I thought he was going to cry, and I almost cried. Anyway, check that out. Anything else we should tell people? Obviously, there are games on ESPN today, so check them out. Are there any games tomorrow? I don't see any. But anyway, baseball is
back.
There's
no day games tomorrow? No!
There is. 1 o'clock, Jake Junis. I can't spell his first name right.
Nobody can.
I don't know what it is.
And I think he and Faria changed their names on their player cards. I mean, it's the Jake. Is it Jake? Is it Jacob? Which is it? Come on, make a decision. And Nicholas Pivetta.
Oh, God. That guy drives me insane. The first outing for Faria was not very good. That's a guy who I like a lot, but his second half was so bad, you have to wonder if people got a book on him, figuring him out.
Yeah. Actually, you know, the nice thing is there's day games every day this week. Love it.
There is a night game on Tuesday on ESPN. It's Josh Tomlin doesn't walk anybody against Garrett Richards. And you like Garrett Richards.
I do like Garrett Richards. Yes.
We're done for today. Thank you so much for listening to our fine show. We will be back on Thursday, the whole gang. Actually, a different gang, I assume. I don't know who else is going to be back. Lippy, thank you so much for being our editorial watchdog today. I'd like to think you did a really good job today, but all you did is really just sit there and laugh, right?
I'd like to think that you guys did a really good job today, so that means you get to keep your jobs.
We survive another day.
For Lippy and producer Gabe Bassain and researcher Kyle Soppy and Tristan, I am Eric. Please have an awesome day. Everything is
awesome. Darkness.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at ESPNRadio.com.